This is Mae Warren. Today is the 30th of December 1996. I'm in Blacksburg, Virginia with Taylor Cole. And you arrived in Lexington in 1959.
That's right, in the fall of 59. I was 6 years old. And when we first got to Lexington, the Lee House was undergoing a renovation. We couldn't move into the Lee House. We moved into a house that was owned, to the best of my knowledge, by Judge Davis on, it was Jefferson Street. The Reeds have been the most recent occupants of that house. Beautiful, beautiful house. We lived there for better part of a year when we first got to Lexington, which was really a wonderful place. Had wonderful boxwoods and a goldfish pond in the backyard. The poor goldfish didn't make it through the year with me there, I'm afraid. But it was a great place.
So, do you remember your father being selected for the job of being president and what his reaction was?
You know, I have to say I don't. You know, over the years, you know, I've heard about Dad being considered for different colleges, and that he chose Washington and Lee for several reasons. And my understanding was he had, you know, was on the list for the University of Alabama and, you know, a few other higher, you know, profile schools, I guess, in the South at the time. And Dad had two things that I think, again, my understanding, made Washington and Lee, you know, his choice. And one was the fact that, you know, it was had a wonderful academic record, tremendous reputation for turning out well-qualified graduates, and then secondly, Dad really liked the idea that Washington Lee had dropped the subsidized athletics back in the early 50s. And some of the articles in this box refer to his feelings that subsidized athletics were a distraction from what the true mission of a university ought to be.
Probably University of Alabama would not have been a good place for it.
Probably the University of Alabama would not have been, but of course, you know, back in those days in the circles, that was aplomb. So, you know, for Dad to bypass the University of Alabama for, 1,500 student school in the Valley of Virginia was, was a significant acknowledgement that there were a lot of very important features in Lexington that weren't available just anywhere in the South.
Tell me about those features. What do you think the attraction is?
Well, again, there's a at Washington Lee, there's an absolute dedication to the student, and to give that individual the greatest opportunity to make the best use of his intellectual resources that can be done. And that's where the priority is and continues to be there. If it's possible to improve, I feel like it is improving. Or continuing an evolution might be a better way to put it. I think that was very much what my father believed very deeply in, that giving individuals an opportunity to bloom in an intellectual sense, as opposed to necessarily a physical sense, was much more importance to a well-rounded and fulfilled life than prowess on a particular athletic field. But that is saying it was just the athletics is very much an oversimplification. Lexington, Washington, and Lee was its academic reputation second to none. Dr. Laverne, I believe, used to say that Washington Lee is the Harvard of the South, and absolutely the case. And for someone who, as my mother used to say, his greatest aspiration was to be an academic. For someone with that orientation, Washington Lee and Lexington was the place to go. I mean, it was the Athens, I guess, of universities, where you went to really explore and give your mind license to really bloom. And I think that's for an academic, where you want to be, and the type of people you want to surround yourself with, and to be thought of as having a role in helping the university to prosper and bloom in its own right. Very attractive.
Now, can you take yourself back to being that 6-year-old boy and 7 and 8 and 9-year-old boy?
Oh, absolutely.
Growing up on campus, what was it like to be there as a child and be in that central position?
This is funny you would ask that question, because I got to admit, I was kind of particularly stuck in the traffic jam today. I was toying with some thoughts of back then, and that was such a profound, influence on my life that it's very easy for me to get down inside of it and talk about it. My first thoughts when we got to Lexington were of Robert E. Lee. I spent my first 6 years in New Orleans, and Dad used to take me down to what was called Lee Circle, and there's a great huge obelisk down there with a statue of Robert E. Lee up on top of it. And when I was 3, 4, and 5 years old, it was straight up. And there was this Robert E. Lee standing up there, and with the rest of my family heritage, he was thought of very highly, I guess, and always as a gentleman. When we got to Lexington, the idea of being able to live in General Lee's house was almost more than I could handle, having grown up just being absolutely surrounded by it. So it was a great thrill for me. I mean, that first year, as nice as the house on Jefferson Street was, I was chomping at the bit to get into Robert E. Lee's house. Of course, my two older brothers made up all kinds of stories to go along with the house and secret passageways, and I knew where every one of them was. I have no idea whether they're actually there or not, but someone has told me since that there was a stairway somewhere in the house that had been bricked over or something like that at one time or another. But there was a place in the basement where you could go and open up the little trap door or something and look through and see what looked like stairs going down. So I was convinced the whole time I was there that was the secret escape. But, you know, growing up in the Lee House was a wonderful place for a little boy who was, you know, probably over romantic anyway, and it was a, you know, it's a wonderful house with that front porch, lent itself to being a ship's whatever bridge with the railing that went around it, and huge big house. My friends and I from down in what they call the Hollow. Do you know where the Hollow is?
Tell me about the Hollow.
A lot of faculty lived down there. There was the Hainers, Rob and his sister, I believe his name was Christine, lived down there. I want to say it's Pat Wise, his family went back to the governor of Virginia, but I can't remember his first name.
You'll have
to. No, I'm not sure that that's right. But his last name is Wise, and he was a couple years older than me. And then, of course, there were all the kids from over at BMI, too. And we used to have wonderful dart gun battles in that house. I mean, you could go and hide, and nobody would ever find you in the place. And so it was great. It was great fun. And in the afternoons, Mom would be in one part of the house. It was very easy for us to go out and get lost in another part of the house and have great dart gun battles until, of course, she found us. But so it was an awful lot of fun. Never really, you know, of course, the historical importance of the place is always with you, and especially in the summertime when all the tourists would come to Lexington. Of course, it's not the tourist mecca now that it is now, but then there were still a large number that would come to the house, and quite often, you know, back in those days, we really didn't lock the doors very much, during the day, and it was not unusual for us to come downstairs and to find tourists wandering around in the downstairs of the house, and my sister used to give me an awful time because I would assume the role as tour guide and go ahead and finish the tour for these people, and which proved to be embarrassing at some time. My sister lived there with us for a couple years after she graduated from college, and she never has let me forget that. So that was, it was a busy place. You know, there's always the formal parties that, you know, the family that Mom and Dad would put on. Receptions and university parties. And of course, you know, we had four kids in our family too. So we would have, you know, our own functions there. And, you know, my brothers would entertain, and my sister would entertain their friends there too, which was a lot of fun. They're entertaining, of course, Gray being 8 years older than me, and Fred being 10 years older, Caroline 15 years older. Their entertaining was a good bit different from my dart gun. Yeah. I was at the age where it was nice for the little brother to be seen and then put some place where he couldn't do any damage. But it was good. I had a great little treehouse out in the backyard. Which,
really?
Oh yeah, the tree that the treehouse was in has long since gone.
I don't know any tree in the backyard.
Yeah. Well, there were several trees that were back there when I was growing up that aren't there now. The hemlocks that are at the back of the backyard that form a barrier between the dorm and the back of the house were planted when we were first there, along with the sundial that is in the backyard. And this is probably one of those things that needs to be edited out, that actually was a present of my father to my mother. And one of the things they decided to leave when they left. But that was a real favorite of hers. You know, that sundial. She had a beautiful rose garden back there, and took a lot of pride in the roses that they formed a line all along the hemlocks there, and then there were peonies in two areas on either side of the door that came out of what we call the breezeway there. We had a basketball goal set up in the breezeway, and Lee Booth, do you know who Lee is?
Yes, I know who he is.
Lee would come by after a football game or something, and you know, I was 6, 7, 8 years old, and he used to tell me he was going to help me get a basketball scholarship some way. I'm 6, 7 years old, man. I practice and practice and practice. And he was a wonder. Well, still is, just a wonderful man. You know, he was just inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame. And there's a wonderful picture of my father and Lee Booth from back in the 60s somewhere.
All right. Wonderful. I'll look at that.
Yeah.
Well, now, what about the fact that you were in the middle of a college campus? Was there interaction with the students?
Oh, of course. Oh, of course there was. I mean, wonderful, wonderful times. For, you know, to be 6, 7, and 8 years old, and, you know, it was like having 1,400, you know, playmates around. Now whether they viewed it that way is another matter entirely. But I used to love to set up a little snow fort there, right next to the Robert E. Lee Episcopal Church, just across the sidewalk there. And as they would come walking down the road. I was at that age, I was an awful athlete. I couldn't do anything, and so my aim was pretty poor. And I don't think there was ever any threat that I was going to do any damage, but I would make a snowball and throw it. And you could just about count on the fact that that they would pick it up and, you know, have a little snowball. So you could spend a nice winter afternoon down there with a lot of them. And, you know, sometimes they would have a tendency to escalate, and as some would come by and they'd start throwing at each other, and, you know, I was probably somewhat of an instigator in some of the. I used to have a red wagon that I would. It was a great deal of fun to take that thing down there near Cyrus McCormick and ride it down the hill, and. You know, 6, 7 years old, it's kind of hard, you know, after doing that a couple of times, get that thing back up. And they were wonderful. I mean, I will forget. They were all of them would walk by and offer to help me pull it up the hill, and they were great about that. Later on, when skateboards first came out, that was a big thing. Both for me and for the students as they are now, and we would start up at Washington Hall, and skateboards weren't quite as good as they are now, but and we would ride down, and then there was a curve. They got steps there at Lee Chapel, but back then they didn't have the steps. They just had a curve in the sidewalk, and you could go all the way down to the Memorial Gate down there, and the. You know, all the students and I would spend lots of time out there riding that.
What are we talking about now?
I was probably 12 then, so that would have been 66.
Gosh, skateboards been around that long?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I've still got mine, as a matter of fact. Still got mine. I am, as you can tell, a pack rat. Really, I'm sure.
I depend on background.
I'm sure.
So how about, did you hang out at the gym?
I did. Sure did. Dick Miller, Dick, or Canfield.
Vern Canfield.
Vern Canfield.
chased me off of the gym floor many, many, many times. Dick Miller in particular, who is just one of my favorite people. He's a great guy. He was, when I was a student at Washington, I was a history major. And for some reason, I have no idea what it is, I walked in to see him. And I got to admit, when I was little, I always kind of, you know, whenever Dick came around, I was always trying to run the other way. I didn't do that when I was a student. And I used to go in, we used to have some wonderful times sitting in there in his office. But one day, I was a history major, horrible at math, couldn't do anything. And out of the blue, Dick Miller gave me a book on money and banking. And, you know, I was wanting to be nice. I said, thanks. You know, he was like, okay. And lo and behold, it turned out to be somewhat prophetic. I'm not sure I've ever mentioned that to him before. I'm going to have to make a point to do that. I still have that book. I still have that book.
That is.
And it was a number of years before I got myself in line enough to kind of realize that this would be something I enjoyed.
Well, maybe he saw something in you that he didn't know was there.
Really. Bless his heart. But we'd spend a lot of time, you know, of course, down in the swimming area. Stearns was the swimming coach then. But golly Moses, when I was growing up there, Lee McLaughlin. Lee was a year older than me, and Jim Farah, who is, of course, the alumni secretary now, and Marshall Washburn. All of us were fairly close in age. But Lee and I were particularly close, and used to spend an awful lot of time with him, you know, while football practice was going on, playing around down at the particularly underneath the stadium down there. Great dirt claw battles took place underneath that stadium during practices and sometimes during the games too. But it was an awful lot of fun. Spent a lot of time. I guess of the destinations, as I got a little bit older, you know, six, you know, when I got up to be eight, well, probably 10, 11, 12 years old. I'd spend a lot of time there. Watched a lot of basketball games. Interestingly enough, Roger Farber, who was a star basketball player back in the 60s, and I think was president of student body, and was a regional president for Central Fidelity. And he has just retired this year. And I remember watching Roger play basketball in old Doremus Gym. And, you know, people talk about how Cameron Indoor Stadium down at Duke University is a wonderful place to go and watch basketball game because you feel like you're right on top of the game. Didn't have anything on old Doremus Gym. I mean, you are literally over top of the players. And they would cheer and get that old track that I don't even know if it's still in there or not. Get that thing just rocking and it was a wonderful place to watch. And they had some awfully good basketball teams back then. Remember a guy named Mel Cartwright and Neer. I forget what his first name was.
He's been inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I can't. But they were terrific years to watch basketball at Washington. They were one of the top teams. And of course, when we first got to Lexington, Coach McLaughlin had the football team. They were the number one small college team in the country there for a couple of years in the 60-61. Bob Payne was playing back then. Was a lineman on the football team. And I went to Coach McLaughlin's camp once I was old enough to do it.
Max Welton.
And Lee and I being close, I got to spend an awful lot of time out there, both when it was camp, when it wasn't. And Rosa McLaughlin, in particular, was just an absolute wonderful influence on me when I was growing up. She has been a great influence. I can't say enough wonderful things, but I don't know if you've had a chance to spend any time with her or not.
I live up Jump Mountain Road.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I was at a place Saturday morning that you've probably been to many times, up to the graveyard.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh,
I'd be glad to tell you stories there if you'd like to hear them.
But not on TV.
Well, I tell you what, one of my, and I'm sorry to get off the subject here, but one of my proudest things I've done since reaching maturity or whatever is when they were trying to build that camp on Maxwell, and I had an opportunity to go in and speak to the Planning Commission.
Thank you.
About that, and also had an opportunity to do a few other things behind the scenes, which I think might have helped a little bit on that.
Thank you.
And that was my one opportunity to give back to Ms. McLaughlin all that she's given me. And
that was a really threatening thing.
Yeah,
our neighborhood.
It really was. And it was a shame that it ended up where it did, because that was a wonderful place too. But I'm glad it didn't went in the backyard.
It's a little more tucked away, though.
Yeah. I can climb the mountain behind my place over in Augusta County, Deerfield. You probably know where Deerfield is.
No, I don't know Deerfield.
Well, I can climb my mountain, look over on Jump Mountain. So I still feel like I'm pretty close. Right.
Well, Jump Mountain is right out my window.
Yeah.
Look at it every single day.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful. I tell you, I've got a picture of it at home, got a picture of House Mountain at home.
Let's talk about the wonderful setting of Washington and Lake. And obviously, you probably spent lots of time at Goshen and House Mountain.
Well, you know, when I was growing up, Washington Lee and Lexington was a wonderful place for a kid. I mean, I hadn't gotten over it yet. I mean, look, I'm here in Blacksburg, and this is too big for me. I haven't gotten over it. When I was growing up, used to spend an awful lot of time back over behind the Wilson Field, back up in all that property where the cross country track was, down at the river. As you would go through the cross country area and down, there was an old, I guess it was a B&O, C&O lock down there. I used to spend an awful lot of time. And we'd go down there with some of my student friends. A fellow comes to mind is Bill Brown, who was from Midland, Texas. I heard from Bill not too long ago. I think he's in Charlotte now with somebody. But that was great fun. There was a little, there's that little Woods Creek that back before they had any of the apartments or the library or anything down there for a kid like myself. And I really did enjoy being outside. Again, I guess part of our family heritage was growing up in farm country, and I just really enjoyed it. But I'd go down there and catch crawfish and bring them back into the Lee house and ask whoever was around to cook them for me. You know, I'm not sure that I'd want to eat a crawfish that came out of Woods Creek now.
Not anymore, you wouldn't.
I don't think so. But back then, and there was a tunnel. You know, there's a tunnel underneath the old cement footbridge, world's longest non-suspension cement footbridge. There's a tunnel down there, and you know, again, for a kid that age, what a great place. I used to take a bow. I had a bow and arrow, the old-fashioned bow and arrow. We'd go down there and shoot at trees, and so that was an awful lot of fun. We really, I got it, when we, not long after we got there, my father found us a retreat out in Bath County on the cow pasture river. The place I have now is not too, I'm on the little calf pasture, so again, I hadn't gotten it out of my system yet. And we would spend our weekends out there. Dad loved to go out into the river and fish, cigarette in hand, and would just spend hours out there. And, you know, I'd ask, Mom, what's he doing out there? And he'd never catch a fish. And Mom said, he's thinking. And Dad was quite a thinker. He would put in an awful lot of time out there, just running things through his head. I never will forget one time. We had a little rowboat out there. And when I was very young, I got in the rowboat and got caught in the rapids. And Dad had to come and quote unquote rescue me from that. And in all of his clothes. And I had, even back then, when Dad put on his suit, I had a great deal of respect for him. Dad was a very debonair dresser, and really cut a fine figure when he looked every bit the role that a university president should. When Dad of course grew up, I don't know if you want to get into his history, but he grew up on a huge cattle ranch in Texas. And of course, horses were a fact of life for them. He worked very hard growing up. The five uncles that I had, four of them went on all five of them were very successful in their careers. The youngest one picked up the farm after my grandfather died. But the other four was my Uncle Taylor, who I was named for, as provost at Duke and Medal of Freedom winner. Had a Uncle Tommy was a doctor, and Uncle Estes was me. But they all grew up working on this farm. They all swore the reason they became successful was because they didn't have to go back and work on the farm. But Dad one time asked me to saddle up. We had a horse up. I saddled up that horse, which was a real honor for me to saddle my dad's horse. Saddled that thing up, and the horse had blown up on me. And I was like 9, and I didn't know it. And Dad took off and was very, every bit as distinguished riding that horse as he was when he was walking down the sidewalk at Washington. Got down about a quarter of a mile, and I was watching him, and all of a sudden saddle and Dad. Oh gosh, that was a traumatic experience for
me. For him too, I suspect.
He was laughing, but
I'm real interested that you talked about how debonair he was. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I know started to happen in his time period, in his administration, was the beginning of the end of conventional dress.
Yes, yes. You'll find an article in here that discusses his opposition to deterioration of that standard.
Well, what was your experience of it? You were there. You saw it happening. What did you see?
You know, quite frankly, we left in 67. I never will forget the first Beatles haircut came to Washington Lee. As a matter of fact, Dad gave the first one a ride to Lexington. He had been to a trip up in Northern Virginia, and somehow or other linked up with this guy and gave him a ride down to Lexington. And it was the topic of discussion throughout the entire campus. And this was like 65, 66, somewhere. But quite frankly, while I was there, things were still pretty much as they had always been. There was a lot of, and it was probably more of a function of my growing older and being more sensitive to the fact that these weren't playmates anymore, that these were young men who, you know, had parties and such. But it seemed like to me that just before we left, you know, things were getting a little more, the decorum was not as not as great as it had been when we first got there. I went to high school for 4 years when we left Lexington. And when I came back, and quite frankly, while I was there, Dean Gillum sent me a copy of the Kalax when I was in high school. And I was shocked going through some of the pages of the Kalax to see fraternity pictures. And in the fraternity pictures, some of the guys' ties were, you know, askew and weren't dressed as I had remembered them being. And of course, when I came back in 71, you know, it was a totally different place. People, you know, all of the traditional dress mandates were gone at that point. People still did it more as a lark, I think, than out of tradition. It was the peer pressure at that point was to in the early 70s, people looked pretty rough. You know, it was, relative to the way they looked when we first came to election, and quite frankly, relative to the way they look now. That was a rough time. You know, there was a lot of turmoil in the late 60s and early 70s, as I'm sure you know about. I think Dad wouldn't, you know, you had to pry to get his opinions on such things. And my father's statements were generally very short, very to the point. And in a strange way, kind of, you know, very bottom line oriented. He didn't react as, oh, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. His was, it's probably not in their best interest, meaning the students. Or something would happen, and he would say, well, that's unfortunate for the university. Those were more his reactions to those types of things. And, again, the Beatles haircut. You know, everybody else in town was talking about it, and Dad, even though he'd given this guy a rock, his only comments, to my recollection, was that he'd given the person a ride down. So he had spent some time and had seen it.
Can you remember who that was?
I cannot, for the life of me, I can't. It seemed like to me that year there were two on campus at the same time, and it was really quite the thing. This was probably 65, maybe, 64, 65, somewhere in there, right? But quite a thing for Lexington at that point.
Quite the thing for anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other major things that was going on in that time period was the whole issue of integration throughout the United States, particularly in the South, and at Washington and Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know? I know you were young, but what do you know about that?
Traumatic time, of course. My father took a very brave stance relative to that. He took it not only as far as Washington Lee was concerned, but also as far as on a national level with the Prince Edward School situation. Dad was very committed to equal opportunity. Regardless of probably convention, he was going to see to it that as much as it was within his ability to have an impact, that was going to be something that was going to be a part of his legacy at Washington Lyon, as it turned out to be. And of course, you know, we're all extraordinarily proud of what he did.
Or you should be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story that I think is, it's a difficult one, certainly, mm-hmm. to deal with, but it's one I'm not at all hesitant to include. And I think it's very important. And clearly what I'm finding as I do my research is that there was a lot of resistance from the Board of Trustees.
Huge. Huge.
Can you talk about that?
Not with any authority. Again, at my age, you know, I wasn't party to the heavier discussions. I do know that, there was a heavy temporary price to be paid in terms of some of the benefactors of the university. But, was symptomatic of the times. Dad took what at the time was a very brave and bold stance. And it was the right thing to do. And Dad, that was my father's bottom line. And I think, anytime you're in a position like that, there's going to be a price of it. And he paid that, and I guess to a certain extent, on a short-term level, the university paid it and was willing to pay it, and it's a stronger institution now for doing that when it did it.
Do you remember the controversy about the invitation to Martin Luther King?
I don't. There is an article in there referencing that. And you've probably seen most of what I have here.
I probably haven't, so I'm really interested to look through.
There is one in there.
Good. Another thing that, and I'm not quite sure I should have sat down with the Calixes and figured out exactly when it happened, but another thing that was starting to happen was the death of fancy dress.
Mm.
Had that died by the time? I think it was still going.
It was still going when we got there. That was a big thing. You know, again, for me at my age, you know, I wasn't party to any of the heavier discussions relative to some of these things that were going on, but. Oh man, for me that was a wonderful time. You know, the whole university was excited, and certainly our household was. You know, it was taking place right across the street, and back in those days, some of the students, we actually had dates that would stay at our house. That was one of the things that was still in effect to a large degree when I first got to Lexington. You know, a lot of the girls' schools around the area. You had to say where you were going to be staying, and by golly, Dan, you better be there.
Especially if it was the President Cole.
We had several. I remember distinctly students coming to pick up their dates at our house. The name Rob Vaughn mean anything? Rob was quite a student leader, and is at Charlottesville, I cannot for the life of me remember the name of the organization that Rob is in charge of now. Humanities is in it. It is associated with the university. I forget, but
mine in Charlottesville.
In Charlottesville.
Oh, is it the Virginia's Humanities Council? I know they're in Charleston.
Yeah. But Rob, I remember when he was a student coming to pick up his date, a young man by the name of T.K. Oates, used to keep dates at our house. And Mom and Dad just loved it. I mean, they just thought that was great, watching these guys come in all their regalia to pick up these pick up their dates. Particularly, I remember one in particular, and it was a Civil War thing. And of course, all of the students were dressed in their Confederate uniforms, and all the dates were dressed in their hoop skirts and everything. And of course, that was at a point that I was still just enthralled with the fact that I was living in Robert E. Lee's house. There were these were real honest to goodness Confederates coming to the door.
That's great. I need to flip the tape over.
Sure.